This week on Manage Your Money God's Way, John and Evelyn Bean will take you on a tour of one of our Bible studies, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. This Bible study uses biblical principles to show you how God intends for us to handle money and possessions, with the end result being debt-free. So join us Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern and Sunday afternoons at 5 Eastern for Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Redbox Media. And welcome to Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministry. John and Evelyn Bean, who are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministry, join me in the studio. And today we're going to take you through our nine-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And John, most people, religious or not, don't fully recognize all that God has to say about how we handle money and possessions. In fact, when we tell them that there is over 2,500 verses in the Bible that deal with money, possessions, and stewardship, they're totally shocked.
You're absolutely correct. And it really goes beyond even understanding that God's involved. If you think about our society today, our society is so fixated on money and possessions. Morals are out the window. All this other stuff is out the window. Anything that should be intrinsically true goes out the window when people start focusing on money and possessions. From a scriptural standpoint, I think it's extremely important that people understand what God has taught us. And it's way too easy to ignore that. People understand maybe in their mind God owns everything, but it's much easier just to forget about that and live my life the way I want to live it. God, you can be in control of 90% everything except my wallet, you know, and I will be in control of my wallet.
Absolutely.
Well, you have a story about the mercenaries Crusades.
During the Crusades, it was a religious war, and the leaders felt that the mercenaries needed to be baptized. And so when they rode their horses into the water for the baptism, they held their swords up out of the water above their heads. They said, God can control my lives, but he can't control my sword. And today, I think the majority of society does exactly the same thing. God, you can control the rest of my life. I'm in control of my pocketbook, my wallet, my money. My possessions.
My.
Oh, my.
Seems to be a theme here. Like a two-year-old.
That's the first word they learn. It's mine.
So one of the remedies for this is our nine-week Bible study, the Compass Catholic nine-week Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And this Bible study is not just about how to create a budget or how to get out of debt. But the most important aspect we convey to the people in this Bible study is that we are stewards of all the blessings God's given us, including our money.
Yes, the Lord owns all of our possessions. In Deuteronomy, it says, to the Lord belong even the highest heavens. The earth is His also, and everything on it. And in Psalms, it says, the world and all that is in it belong to the Lord. The earth and all who live on it are His.
So God owns everything, and as stewards, it's our responsibility to manage all the blessings that God has bestowed upon us, including our money, our families, our homes, our jobs, our businesses. Anything we have and everything we have belongs to God.
And once people understand this and they totally absorb that into their being, and they understand that we are stewards of all the blessings that He's given us.
And that's the change that most people experience when they go through the study.
Exactly.
So this is Navigating Your Finances God's Way by Compass Catholic, and we're going to give you an overview of our nine-week Bible study. So it's done in a small group environment within a parish.
Lasts for 9 weeks.
9 weeks, and it meets for 2 hours each week with about 20 minutes of, I'm using quote marks in the air, homework every night, which is Bible verses to read and questions to answer, or practical financial exercises that apply to the topic of that week.
And don't forget, you get to memorize a verse each week.
Yes, the verse memory most people complain about the most, but it's also what most people remember the most, because when they hear those verses at Mass, it kind of turns a light bulb on.
Yes, absolutely.
So the process for the class is that it opens in prayer. Each person recites the memory verse. We discuss the Bible verses and the questions, and I just want to make sure everybody understands that there's never any financial information shared among the participants. So we're not asking you to tell everybody how much debt you have or how much your income is or how much you have in savings. All of the personal financial information is private. We don't share that.
It's not that we don't share it. You don't share it with us.
Yes.
I think that's important.
Nobody needs to know it.
Nobody needs to know, exactly.
And then at the end of the discussion time, we do prayer logs, which is a way for everyone in the small group to hold their fellow participants in prayer for the week. And then we end the group meeting in prayer.
Yes. You know, after the first 2 or 3 weeks, we actually even try to encourage our participants to facilitate a class so they can see how easy it is. It's really facilitation. It's not teaching scripture. You know, it's not teaching finances. It's facilitating the flow of the class.
So you don't have to have an accounting degree or a theology degree in order to facilitate the class.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. You got to learn how to, you have to know how to watch the clock.
Watch the clock. Keep everybody involved.
Yes.
And keep the discussion on track.
Yes.
Don't let anyone go down a rat hole.
So let's talk about week one, Evelyn. That's the introduction. You want to start it?
Sure. The verse we memorized for week one is Luke 16:11, which kind of sets the stage for the whole study, which is, "If therefore you have not been faithful in handling worldly wealth, how can you be trusted with true wealth?"
That's a pretty strong verse.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. So the homework prior to the first class is you read the book, Your Money Counts. You get that when you buy your books, or it's something that we have on our website that you can download as an ebook for free. If you just go to compasscatholic.org, you'll see it, bingo, right there.
In the store section.
Yep. The primary purpose for week one is to allow the participants to introduce themselves to each other and share what each one hopes to achieve through the class and maybe why they're there. You know, do they have something special that they want to accomplish?
Yeah, because the whole first week is pretty much about introductions and a brief discussion on the Your Money Counts book. So it's not a deep dive Bible study until the second week.
Yeah. You know, the whole goal for this class and for the study itself is a heart transformation. We want people to take the knowledge that God owns everything, transfer that to their heart, and begin to live their life that way. And that's a huge, huge transformation.
And one of the things that we also want to do is we want to hold people accountable for doing the homework. You're participating in the Bible study and you haven't read the Bible verses and you haven't meditated on them and you haven't answered the questions, you're really not qualified to participate in the discussion.
I agree.
So we very much hold the participants accountable for doing their homework to make sure that they are knowledgeable enough to participate in the discussions.
And the homework is fairly easy.
Yes.
I mean, I saw you do the quotation mark 20 minutes, and it's about 15, 20 minutes, but it's educational. You're actually picking up the Bible.
It's educational, and it's also prayerful when you're praying for the other people in your small group.
So week two is titled God's Part and Our Part. The verse for week two is a little bit longer. It's from 1 Chronicles 29:11-12. "Everything in heaven and earth is yours, and you are king, supreme ruler over all. All riches and wealth come from you. You rule everything by your strength and power, and you are able to make anyone great and strong." So the focus of week two is understanding that God is the owner of all things. It's a first step towards beginning that transformation that we've been talking about, from an individual who is in control to someone who is a steward.
And the week two work really identifies various scripture verses showing that God is in control and uses everything for his good. And he also has promised to provide for our needs. Now, notice I said needs, not wants. So needs are food, clothing, and shelter. God promised to provide that to us. Not a high salary, a fancy car, restaurant meals, and the latest clothing, or the latest tech gadgets.
What about a big house?
Not a big house.
Okay. Not a big house. Shelter.
You know, it's interesting, Steve, that you brought that up, because a lot of people have a poverty or a prosperity mentality when it comes to stewardship. They either think that if you're a faithful Christian, you need to be poor, or if you're a faithful Christian, you need to be rich. And what we teach is not that you have to be poor or God will make you rich, but that you have to be faithful with everything God's given you, no matter how much or how little you have.
So our part that we learn about in week two is to be faithful with what we have been given. Be faithful in every area. We want to develop a more intimate relationship with Jesus, and part of that is handling our money faithfully. That helps create that intimate relationship. It helps develop our character, and we just want to put our finances in order.
And some of the principles of faithfulness we talk about is that if we waste possessions, God may remove us as stewards. So we need to be faithful in little things, and we also need to be faithful if we're using someone else's resources. And the practical applications for this week is to do a symbolic quitclaim deed, where we actually have the people write down everything they're giving to God and sign that document.
Yes, yes. And we also ask you to prepare a list of assets. And we want you to begin a 30-day tracking of income and spending. And so what that is at the beginning is basically you're keeping track of every penny you spend. And for most people, that's a huge shock at the end of the month when they see where their money has gone, because they don't understand that. They know the big bills, the car, the mortgage, whatever, but they don't understand all the pennies that slide through their fingers.
All the little $5 and $10 and $20 purchases that kind of slip through the cracks.
Yep, exactly, exactly. And just to go back to that deed for a second, there's nothing legal about it, okay? It's an exercise, and it's symbolic. You're giving everything, your children, all your possessions, all your finances, all that. You're giving that to God because it's already His anyway.
You got it.
It's symbolic.
And coming up next, week number 3 of the Bible study, called Debt. What the Bible tells us about debt, and we'll share methods of getting out of debt. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Redbox Media. And welcome back to Manage Your Money God's Way. In the studio, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministry, John and Evelyn Bean. And today we're taking you through our core Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. It's a 9-week small group study, and we're up to week 3, Evelyn.
In week 3, we discussed the topic of debt, that bad four-letter word. And the verse for that week is from Proverbs 22:7. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave of the lender. What do you think about that, John?
Well, it's a true concept. We've actually experienced that in our lives.
Yes, we have.
Not recently, when we first were having our issues. We became slaves to several lenders.
And it was not a happy time.
So the discussion centers on what is considered debt and how the cost of debt can act as a vulture to family finances as families try to make ends meet. The verses are discussed that identify what the Bible says about debt and about borrowing. And you'd be surprised that, you know, what's in the Bible that talks about debt? Well, there's a lot of things that talk about debt and borrowing.
And the Bible doesn't really ever say that debt is a sin.
That's
but
true.
But it does call debt a curse.
Yes. And in this section, there's also some discussion about co-signing credit reports and credit scores.
Let's go back to co-signing, because I know there's a verse from Sirach we use. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like, if you have co-signed for a neighbor, flee like a gazelle.
They were talking about this back in the 2,000 years ago. Don't sign for somebody else.
And a lot of people think they're doing their son or daughter or family member a favor when they're co-signing for them, and what they don't realize is that that makes them responsible for that debt, just as if they had taken that money and borrowed it themselves.
Yep, and it goes against their credit report. And when the person that you signed for doesn't make the payment, you get dinged on your credit report also.
So co-signing is very, very dangerous.
That's a bad thing. So the other another thing is that we talk about the struggles that others might be going through, and they can relate to that based on their own struggles. So you're beginning to develop a bonding process here with the other participants.
So we talk also about a snowball, paying off your debt. We encourage everyone to start with credit cards and then do consumer loans and then pay off the mortgage. And the best way to pay off your credit card debt, in our opinion, is to pay off the smallest balance first, because that gives you a quick win and that will keep you more excited for the long haul than if you try to pay off some other method.
That's part of what we call the snowball. Take a little bit of extra money and pay that first debt, that smallest debt, pay it off and use everything you were paying on that smallest debt and apply it plus what you were already paying on the second smallest debt to pay off that second debt. And you just keep repeating that process over and over until all your debt is completely paid.
So one of the practical applications that week is we encourage the participants to create a debt list and establish a strategy to pay off their own debt, whether they only have a mortgage debt or if they have credit cards and car loans and mortgage and all that other stuff.
Yep,
it's very important, because you're wasting money paying interest on your debt.
Exactly. And we also introduce in week three the compass map. It has seven destinations that help you establish exactly where you are on the map and what steps that you need to take specifically to move to the next destination. As you're moving forward through these destinations, that ultimate goal is financial independence.
So it's the steps you need to take to get to financial independence.
Yes.
And anybody listening can download the Compass Map from our website.
Yes, compasscatholic.org.
It's under resources.
And the last thing in the practical applications for week three, continue tracking all your spending.
And we encourage people to do that ongoing, even after the class is over.
Even after the class is over, we've been doing it for the last 28 years.
There you go. And it works.
It does. It does.
So let's move on to week four. The topics for week four are honesty and seeking godly counsel.
The verse from week four is from Leviticus 19:11. You shall not steal. You shall not lie or speak falsely to one another.
So in our society today, there's a real difference between being honest and truthful. You know, it's like the little boy that threw his ball in the house and knocked over a lamp, and the lamp broke. And mom says, "Did you break the lamp?" And the little boy says, "No, mommy," because in his opinion, the ball broke the lamp. So he's being truthful without really being honest.
I didn't do it.
This is one time where the me doesn't apply, right? But you hear people that get into trouble, like a politician or a rock star or an athlete who did something that was not quite ethical. And the words they use to describe or justify what they did are bending the truth in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. So the scriptures and the catechism say a lot of things about honesty and how honesty is required of us in every circumstance. The difference between what the church teaches and how society treats honesty is another topic. And then what do we have to do when we've been dishonest?
And one of the things we encourage people to do is to seek the sacrament of reconciliation.
Honesty is required for all leaders. That means no bribes.
And we also talk about seeking godly counsel. The idea that we can know everything about everything is just false. And we can make better decisions and better choices if we seek counsel when we're making decisions, especially financial decisions.
Now, what are the sources of our counsel? Who should we seek out? One would be scriptures. One would be your spouse, and godly people. And basically in that order.
See, and that's what I like about the navigating class, because in that class you are with like-minded people who are trying to live good lives and be good Catholics. So that's a good source of godly counsel, is the people you meet in the navigating classes.
The other thing is you're going to learn what kind of counsel to avoid.
And what kind of counsel should people avoid?
Well, you've got to know where the person's coming from. You know, if you're out there buying a new car and you're seeking counsel of the car salesman to tell you all the good things and the best thing for you to do, that might not be the person you want to listen to 100%, because he has a vested interest in what you do. He wants you to buy that car, so he gets a commission. You have to understand where people are coming from, what their background is. What about somebody who is very worldly but doesn't know Christ? Might not be able to advise you the best, give you the best Christian advice. He might have very, very great technical knowledge, and if you're seeking technical knowledge, then it's okay to seek out that person and get their technical knowledge, but then you want to put that through the filter of the Scriptures.
And balance that with godly advice and godly counsel.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So our practical applications for week four are to complete life insurance needs. You know, a lot of people are underinsured or overinsured, so we're trying to help them make sure they have the right amount of life insurance. Understand different filing processes that work for you, whether you're going to keep your files in a hard copy or online or at some other location. And
guess what?
Continue tracking all expenses and income.
Absolutely. So week five is generosity. The verse is to keep in mind the words of the Lord Jesus, who himself said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive." You know, we talk about attitudes and the approach to giving in this week's work. And the basic attitude in giving is to do it in love. One of the advantages of giving is to grow closer to God. And the amount to give, that's something that you determine between you and your spouse.
You know, a lot of churches teach the 10% tithe is required. While that may be a good starting point, a better starting point or a better ending point may be what you're capable of giving, instead of treating it as a percentage and just another bill to pay.
You know, Evelyn, that's exactly what the U.S. bishops said when they wrote their pastoral letter on stewardship. The amount that you should give is based on your capability, not on a specific percentage. And really, that's a much more severe guideline, because there are many people who are capable of giving much more than they actually are.
You know, a lot of people also justify not giving because they give their time and talent to the church. And while that may be okay if someone's in extreme poverty, a lot of times it's used as an excuse not to give money to the church.
I agree with that. As you approach your giving, you should think of it from a P, letter P, perspective. It should be periodic, in other words, weekly.
Every Sunday.
It should be personal. It's your gift to God. It's a private deposit. It should be a priority. In other words, it's not from leftover stuff. It should be from your first fruits. It should be premeditated, and it should be done without pride.
And the last P is places. You know, you should give to your parish, your diocese, and other ministries that are close to your heart or that are have made a difference in your life.
And the practical application for the week is the giving grid, which actually gives you an opportunity to think about the various places that you give, write it down, and look at it and see how you compare to those things that are available.
We have more information on our Bible studies simply by going to compasscatholic.org. Click on Bible studies and you'll find the one we're discussing today, Navigating Your Finances God's Way, along with Set Your House in Order, our five-week study that helps you get your house, all your important documents in order. Next up, we're going to discuss a nasty four-letter word that at times make people cringe. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Redbox Media.
Yeah.
You're listening to Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministry, and today we're taking you through our nine-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Now, you can take a look all by yourself by going to compasscatholic.org, click on Bible Studies, and the top one will be Navigating Your Finances God's Way. The co-founders of the ministry are in the studio today, John and Evelyn Bean. And Evelyn, we are at week number six, and it's simply titled
Work. And this is another four-letter word that people don't think about too much. All of the talents and skills we have come from God. So the verse this week is from Colossians 3, 23 and 24. Whatever your task, work heartily as serving the Lord, not men. You are serving the Lord Christ.
Based on that Bible verse, work shouldn't be a nasty four-letter word.
That's right.
Because it's an opportunity to serve Christ. And what you do, what your efforts are, should be as a glory to Him.
And this is another place where people leave God out. I mean, most people don't think about taking God to work with them, yet if He's the giver of everything, part of what we need to do when we work is use our talents and skills to glorify Him.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about the responsibilities of both employees and employers. Other work issues are discussed, such as the benefits or negative aspects on the family when both parents are working. Sometimes it's necessary to have both parents working because there just isn't enough money to make ends meet with only one income. That's something that is beneficial. But on the other hand, if both parents are working, sometimes work replaces family activity.
And one of the problems is when both working parents are working to provide all the frills that may not be necessary. It's that needs versus wants discussion again.
So it's a lifestyle issue rather than a need issue.
Correct.
Yes.
Very well said.
And so by now, you know, you're in your sixth week, you're pretty familiar with the rest of the participants. The discussion during the class time is open, it's free-flowing, you're holding each other accountable, you're having fun with the other people when they can't quite remember the verse, but the bonding is increasing with each passing week. And what we found is, as we've led classes over the years, the people in those classes have become very near and dear friends of ours. You have basically developed godly counselors because the other people in the class know
kind of where you're coming from and what your mindset is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a great place to seek advice.
So the practical applications for week six are a little spreadsheet on second wage earner income and expenses. You know, so many times you look at the salary the person's bringing in without thinking of the additional expenses that are related with the second spouse working. And when you add up all the additional expenses, such as convenience meals, transportation, lunches out, cleaning, dry cleaning, daycare,
new clothes,
sometimes it's not, you're not making as much as you think you are, and it's really not worth the stress on the family.
You know, there have been a lot of people who've been totally shocked to realize that second job that they got is only netting them about $1 an hour.
Yes.
And then you have to make the decision, is that worth it?
You got it. And then we encourage people to develop an estimated spending plan or budget based on what they found from tracking expenses and their income.
You know, a lot of people are really scared of having a budget because they think it's like putting on a straitjacket. I don't want to be in a straitjacket. I want to be free. I want to do the things I want to do. And well, you can do that with a spending plan or with the budget, because what you're doing is you're telling your money the places it needs to be. So you're allocating this much for this and this much for this and this much for this, and you have the ability to allocate for the good things, the fun things that you want to do also.
Instead of just having the money trickle out of your fingers and wonder where it is at the end of the month.
The important thing is that when you do that, you can only spend 100% of the net income that you've got. And if you are paying attention to that, then you're not going to go into debt because you're only spending what you've got coming in. That's an important thing.
All right, let's move on to week 7.
One more thing on that practical applications.
Track income and spending.
Track your pennies, that's right. Keep tracking your pennies.
So week 7 is saving and investing, and this week we have two verses. They're both from Proverbs 21. The first is, precious treasure remains in the house of the wise, but the fool consumes it. And the second one is, the plans of the diligent are sure of profit, but all rash haste leads certainly to poverty.
Good verses there.
Great verses. Good for verses. Saving and investing.
Precious treasure remains in the house of the wise. I love that. I love that. We don't want to be foolish and consume it all. I guess it's important here to point out that in any of our classes, we do not provide specific financial investment advice.
Now, this is not about what stocks to buy or what mutual funds to involve in. This is a discussion around the different types of savings and the attitude about savings.
And we'll talk about investment vehicles, but not specific vehicles.
Right.
So we talk about what's the purpose for saving?
It's to take care of your family.
To take care of your family.
Not to become rich.
So if your purpose is to provide for your family, both currently and in the future, that's okay. If your purpose for saving money is just to, as Evelyn said, become rich, that's not appropriate.
Or accumulate as much as possible.
Yeah. That's not appropriate. That's something that I was focused on way back in the beginning, which got us into
D2.
Yep. I wasn't going to say that, Evan.
That's okay. That was a good version. We also encourage everybody to begin saving with their first job because of the magic of compound interest. If you are saving early, you can accumulate more because you're getting interest on your interest. That's very important to keep in mind.
Compound interest can work for you if you're saving, or it can work against you if you're accumulating debt. So, Steve, I got a question for you. I've got two people here, Danielle and Matt. And Danielle started saving $1,000 a month when she was 21 years old.
A month or a year?
Excuse me, a year. Annual savings. And she did that through the age of 28. So she saved for 8 years.
Okay.
Matthew was having a good time in those 8 years between 21 and 28.
So he was spending.
So he's spending. Mm-hmm. He didn't really begin his savings until he reached 29. In the year he reached 29, he started saving $1,000 a month.
A year.
A year. And he saved $1,000 a year all the way until he was 65. So that's 37 years.
Okay.
So Danielle saved for 8. She has 8,000.
And she never saved any more.
Matthew saved for 37 years.
$1,000 a year.
$1,000 a year.
Got it.
And they both had the exact same interest rate. At age 65, who has the most money?
I would say that smart guy Matthew.
That smart guy, Matthew, actually wasn't quite so smart.
Wait a minute. He put away $1,000 a year for all those years. Danielle, $1,000 for 8 years.
That's correct.
So why wasn't he so smart?
Because Danielle has...
Did Danielle go to the dog track? Is that what her money?
Danielle has over $427,000 from the $8,000 she saved.
Okay.
And Matthew, from the $37,000 he saved, has $363,000.
And I know you're going to tell us how that happened.
That's a difference of almost $75,000.
Same interest rate.
Same interest rate, and it's because of the magic of compound interest.
Wow.
Because Danielle's interest accumulated year after year, and each year she earned interest on her interest on her interest on her interest.
Just think if she would have put away $1,000
every month. Wow. Yeah, for that whole time. Matthew was smart, but not as smart as Danielle. Woman's intuition, I think.
or maybe just women smart. So we also talk about leaving an inheritance to your children, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And our advice is that you shouldn't leave an inheritance to your children if they're not able to handle it or if it compromises your ability to meet your basic needs.
The other thing that we're talking about is in the practical applications, we're talking about your net worth calculation. And so we take that list of assets and subtract a list of debts that you've created. That gives you a net worth. We talk about tweaking your spending plan. You've created a spending plan. Maybe it comes up to be 105% instead of 100 or 97% instead of 100. So you go through and you massage that a little bit to get it in the right spot. We actually even give some sample percentage guidelines, how much you should be spending on housing or food or transportation, those kinds of things. And then guess what?
I bet we want them to track their income and their spending.
The last thing every week, keep tracking every penny you're spending.
Today, we're taking you through our 9-week small group study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And you can see for yourself all the information that we're discussing today by going to compasscatholic.org, click on Bible Studies, and take a look at the topics that are covered over the 9 weeks. Also, click on Practical Applications for each week so you get an idea of all the resources that are available to you absolutely free. That site, again, is compasscatholic.org. The menu item you're looking for is Bible Studies. Now, coming up after the break, what do you do financially if there's a crisis in your family's life? This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Redbox Media. And welcome back to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. Now, our ministry uses biblical principles to guide you through handling money, your possessions, and to be a better steward. And we are taking you through our 9-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Now, the beauty of this Bible study can be a life changer. It'll show you how to get out of debt, and this is a big and, it's going to show you how to remain debt-free from that point forward. Now, today we've been taking you through the 9-week study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way, and we are up to week 8. And, John, this is something that I feel everyone should prepare for and pray that they'll never have to use it.
Week 8 is entitled Crisis and Perspective. The verse for week 8 is one of my most favorite verses. It comes from Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 and 13. For I have learned to be content in any and all circumstances. I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and want. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me.
And like St. Paul, even we Americans can learn to be content. It's easy to be content when we're in a position where everything's going well and we've got enough money, but it's hard to be content in those crisis situations.
Yes.
But we also talk about how to handle crisis situations, right?
Yeah, and the best thing to do is to prepare for a crisis before the crisis happens.
How do I know what the crisis is going to be?
Well, you don't. Why don't you think of something that might or could happen in your life? For example, if in your family, both spouses are working, a crisis could be you lose one income. So now that your income is reduced by the loss of one income, how are you going to adjust your budget so that you're still only spending 100% of what you're actually bringing home, not 100% of what you hoped you would bring home?
You know, and this is where a lot of people make so many mistakes, because we've counseled I don't know how many couples over the years that have had a loss of one income and they continue to spend. And that's what we did.
We did it, absolutely.
Yeah.
We know. It's easy to do.
And you sustain your lifestyle at a certain level by using credit cards.
Yeah. I deserve to have this lifestyle. And guess what? If you don't have the money coming in, you don't deserve it anymore.
You know, I was going to ask you that question. Have you worked with couples where an income was lost, and how do you get them into a different mindset?
Well, usually by the time they come to us, their hair's on fire, so they're ready to make a change.
Okay, so they've already started digging a deep hole.
Yeah, they've already seen the size of the hole, and they're ready to start digging their way out of
it or climbing out of it.
And actually, if their hair's not on fire, a lot of times they're not ready to make changes because they still have that entitlement attitude. I should be making this much. I should be able to live my life with this kind of a lifestyle. But if they don't have the income to support it, they can't do it.
And it's things that could easily be cut, like after school activities for the kids or...
Oh, I look at some of the premium channels on the cable bills that people we work with on what they're paying for cable.
Mm-hmm.
And when you ask them, do you watch these channels? No.
But, yeah, it's kind of the insidious spending that goes on, and that's one of the reasons we want people to track their spending is so that they can make conscious decisions about, wow, I'm spending a lot of money here, but I'm really not using it, or I don't need it, or it's a wasteful thing, or that used to be good, but now it's not because I'm really not using it anymore.
You know, another huge expense in most people's budgets are their cell phones. Mom and dad got a phone, and three out of the four kids have got a phone, and they're spending $200 or $300 a month on cell phones. If you're deep in debt, your income's been halved.
What can you do to cut that cell phone bill?
Yeah, I agree that it's good to be able to make contact with people, but you don't need all the other fancy stuff that you've got on your cell phone until you get to the point where you're not in debt anymore. Another thing would be subscriptions. How many magazine subscriptions are you paying for? Subscriptions to...
movie channels, like Steve said.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. All the TV stuff. What about all your entertainment expenses? If your debt is rising faster than the national debt, maybe you shouldn't be playing golf every Saturday. Maybe you shouldn't be going shopping all the time.
For entertainment. And then buying things,
Yeah.
But most people aren't ready to cut everything, and that's one of the big things that happens in a crisis is people are reluctant to cut their lifestyle. I mean, we've run into that with people over and over and over again, and we did the same thing.
Yes, absolutely.
If there's a financial mistake, we made it. So the two things that always come up when we're talking about crisis is what role God plays in our crisis and why bad things happen to good people. It is what it is. This week, we also talk about what we should be teaching our children. You know, if we want them to be financially sensible when they're adults, it's important to start teaching them that as children. So the practical applications for this week are developing your crisis budget, organizing your estate, and to continue tracking your spending and tweaking your budget.
All good things. Week 9 is entitled Eternity. The verse, it comes from Mark 8:36. What profit is there for one to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? So what we do today will help to determine our lives in eternity.
And most people don't understand. I mean, we hear the verse or the words all the time that we're a pilgrim church. But basically, as people, we're pilgrims on the earth because our true citizenship is in heaven. And how we live our lives here determines what happens to us in heaven.
And when you think about it, if you were a pilgrim, what would you be taking with you?
Only what I needed.
Yeah, because you got to carry it on your back, basically,
yes. Or
on a donkey. There's not a lot of possessions there. And yet, think about our lives today and how many possessions we have. And how we continue to struggle and strive to gain more possessions. The most important thing here is what is our personal relationship with Jesus?
And are we truly stewards of all the blessings that God's given us?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the best ways of intensifying that personal relationship with Jesus is through the Mass. Through the partaking of the Eucharist. I think that we forget about those things. We separate Mass from our lives.
We're Sunday Catholics and Monday Catholics. Sunday we're in church, and Monday we go back to our regular life.
Exactly. You know, everyday Catholics, and not just Monday Catholics, everyday Catholics and Sunday Catholics. Yeah, I agree with you. Are we truly stewards of all the blessings that God's bestowed upon us? The week ties up all the topics. This week ties up all the topics into how we're going to live our lives. And for many, as they reach this week, that transformation of the heart, the knowledge that they took from their brain, moved to their heart, and it totally changes their lives.
And for some people, more time and work is required, but they're headed in the right direction. So one of the practical applications for week 9 is our life goals.
Yes.
What is your life goal? Writing them down and committing to them.
And it's personal goals, family goals.
Financial goals.
Financial goals, yeah.
Giving goals.
Yep.
So let's wrap this up. You know, as you said earlier, John, in every class we found lifelong friendships that have started when people didn't even know each other 9 weeks ago.
Yes.
So that's a real blessing to see.
And, you know, people handle their money differently. And, you know, if they have debt, they are trying to eliminate it. And by participating in the class, you hear a lot of different ideas. And it gives you a perspective that maybe you hadn't thought of, because we all have different perspectives. We think about things differently. Evelyn is about 180 degrees opposite of anything that I'm doing. So when you're reacting with the rest of the participants, that's a real positive.
And one of the things that we hear a lot is that husbands and wives become closer, especially if there's any tension or miscommunications in their marriage about money.
Yeah.
I think we had a statistic that said 79% of the people that took the Bible study with their spouse said that their marriage was stronger.
That's correct. So how do you get the Bible study started in your parish? Well, the first thing is to have somebody who's interested and who can be the focal point. And that person needs to form a team with a couple other people to lead the effort. You need to talk to your pastor about starting a new Bible study. And, you know, you have to do that pretty much any time you're starting something new in a parish. And then maybe the first time you run the class, you just go out and handpick students. So you get 8 or 10 people in your class, ask them to help you get it started, and then you can kind of grow it from there.
Other ways we've seen parishes start, which are very effective, is the pastor goes through with a finance committee or the parish council or the staff. And that works very well, too.
And there's a couple things you don't want to do, though. And one of those is to sell this as something for people who are in trouble. Yes. People who are in trouble need this, but how many people do you know who have a lot of money, don't have a lot of debt, but they don't understand God's
ownership?
You know, they think they're in control. That's not the case. We have the class available in both English and Spanish. It's one of the few Bible studies that's available in both languages. You know, basically, you don't need any training. It's just facilitation skills. But we do have a whole curriculum of training on the website, compasscatholic.org. And you can download a PDF file and watch videos to make sure that you're totally in sync with what we do.
Now, after listening to us today, you can take your very own tour of the Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Simply go to compasscatholic.org, click on Bible Studies, and Navigating Your Finances will be the first one that shows up. And if you think, wow, this would be great and very helpful for myself and I can think of 5 other friends, share the information with them, fill out the contact form that you see at compasscatholic.org, and we'll be back in touch with you and your church. Well, thank you so much for listening. Hope you join us again for Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.